Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. This is the preview show, and this week it's a bumper preview show. We're not just looking ahead to Charlton at the weekend, one of the best days in the calendar, but we have a new manager at the helm. Neil Harris has just been appointed as manager of Cambridge United, and I'm live with Tom Walker to dissect it as the news filters through. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm really good. Bit of a false start before we started recording, I'll be honest.
We did. That was a hard intro to do again, to be honest, to get yourself up for it again.
Yeah, it might end up being a fitting metaphor for us to come on Saturday, but we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get into Saturday and before we get into Neil Harris, we have to talk about a crime that occurred in West London on Monday night, an absolute robbery that was reported at the Nobu Hotel at the FSA Awards. Tom, talk us through it.
Oh, dear. Second year there. Second year totally robbed, unfortunately. I mean, first year at Man City, second year as Arsenal.
I actually couldn't get, like, on the night, I was like proper like a broken record just saying that. That's the Premier League's top two we've lost to. if they are going down the 92 in order, we're going to be waiting for ages before we win.
We were so indignant as well. We were so like, if it was on content alone, it'd be us every time.
No, but honestly, brilliant evening, a brilliant time had. Hopefully we'll be back next year and we'll come back with a trophy in our hands. Another man who'll be hoping to hold some sort of trophy in the next 18 months is Neil Harris. I mean, that is ambitious, granted, but you never know. Still in the FA Cup, aren't we, Tom? So look, initial thoughts, Neil Harris, 18-month deal to the end of the 24-25 season. How are you feeling about it?
I can't help but think he's taken us as far as he can. Oh, dear. I'm quite happy. I'm quite happy, I think. Look, I think it's been pretty obvious for about 24 hours that it was going to be Neil Harris. I think the odds on lower league managerial appointments are quite volatile, it's fair to say. You know, a small amount of money changes the odds quite a lot. But even still, when it goes as short as it was for Neil Harris, it indicates there's something in it. And obviously we had an inkling, should we say, that this news was coming. So, you know, we had obviously a bit of time to reflect on it and kind of think about what our thoughts were. And I think I've kind of fully come around to the idea this is a pretty decent appointment. I don't really know what more you would want. Within the sort of realms of possibility, what sort of manager would Cambridge United be able to go out and hire in 2023? Despite everything that's happening off the pitch, as a lower mid table, potentially relegation candidate in League One, you know, if you can go out and get a manager who's done well at this level before, obviously won promotion, had a, I know he's obviously got the relegation with Gillingham on his CV, but I think it's a harsh one to judge him on because they were so far adrift when he took over and they ended up going down on goal difference. Obviously, he's got Cardiff into the playoffs and left Gillingham in League Two in a pretty decent spot. I think a lot of their fans were quite surprised to see him go, like a lot of the sort of wider Football League sort of fandom was. And I think it's really difficult to look at this as anything other than a pretty decent appointment. Someone who I think ticks a lot of the boxes that we would have had when looking for a manager. And I'm looking forward to seeing how it shapes up.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary, to be honest. It's interesting. We're going to get into a few of the questions that you've sent in. It's fair to say, I think not all United fans are probably thinking in exactly the same terms that you are there. So we'll get into a few of those. We're also going to hear from a Millwall fan a little bit later on, who obviously has got a very strong affinity with that club. So it seemed like the right place to get a bit of a measure of the man, I suppose. Let's go through his career a little bit, actually, I think. Just to start off, I think it's a good sort of good setting. So 46 years old, he was a striker. Started his career at, Tom?
Cambridge City.
Correct.
Knows the city.
Scum.
Knows the city. Important, that, isn't it? Important to have very a connection important to the city. Don't worry, which club.
Yeah.
He knows Mill Road. That's all. Yeah. Milton Road, I guess. It would
Milton be Road. But yeah, but he might still. You never know. Not too far away.
He'll eventually do it.
Anyway, he will have done. Millwall plucked him out from non-league. 233 appearances there, 93 goals. So already put himself down as a club legend. Then he went to Cardiff, Forest, Gillingham, back to Millwall, and then to Southend before taking on Millwall under-21s. So he worked a lot in their academy before a few shifts as caretaker manager. Then 4 years at Millwall. In that time, finishing the playoffs in League One and lost in the playoffs. And then the year after that, got promoted and then kept him in the Championship for two seasons. Then he moved to Cardiff, who were also in a bit of trouble, I'm pretty sure, at the time. And in his first full season, he took them to fifth in the Championship and lost out to eventually promoted Fulham for promotion to the Premier League. He was sacked the season after that. And then after a year out of management, he joined Gillingham. And obviously, that's the same year that we were in League One. I think he had 10 points adrift. It was in February. I remember going down to their place when I think it was one of his first games in charge, and they beat us 1-0, and it looked like he'd finally got a bit of momentum going about the place, and they ended up only going down on goal difference on the final day. And then a season in League Two. Is that right? No, is this the last season? Did you do one full year in League Two? Yeah, that's right. And then the American ownership came in January. And since then, the form's been brilliant, but he was sacked in October, quite surprisingly, as you say, for a style reason, it sounds like, something that has been part of the question. So, I mean, you look at that CV, Tom, like you say, it's hard not to think. I mean, there's 167 games managed in the Championship in there. It's got to be exciting, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And look, I get what you mentioned earlier, that there will be a lot of people listening, a lot of people who sort of follow the club who might not share that sentiment. And I think, you know, naturally a lot of that comes from following someone like Mark Bonner, who was obviously held in such high regard. And I guess for a lot of fans, there might be, well, firstly, obviously still a bit of a disappointment that he's gone. It's obviously happened quite quickly. From obviously that loss against Lincoln in the morning after Bonner leaving, to obviously having somebody completely new, who I guess we've not even considered as a possibility, you know, just a week or two ago, but also the fact that, you know, we're appointing a manager who, you know, I don't want to kind of be disrespectful, but he's kind of on that merry-go-round, isn't he? You know, he's kind of one of the names that pops up in the bookies list all the time, which isn't a bad thing. But, you know, when you have someone like Bonner who obviously, you know, represented what he did and had the connection to the football club that he did, that felt like a bit of a step away from that. And that was quite nice. I think for us, we felt we had something truly unique, and this maybe isn't as unique as that was, but that doesn't mean it's a bad appointment. I think in a lot of senses, it's actually a real upgrade on Bonner. And I mean that with the greatest respect, but you know, if you look at the experience he's got as a manager, the experience he's got as a player, you know, I don't know necessarily how much weight that carries, but I'm sure that that might give him perhaps a better insight into the dressing room and sort of how players are feeling. But yeah, I think above all, you know, you look at his record, you look at what he's achieved, and you know, it's someone who comes in with a very decent track record. Look, is it the best currently out of work manager? Probably not. Like, there's probably other options out there that people might look at and might have been maybe above him in terms of their own preference. I'm sure people would look at like a Nathan Jones, for example, which obviously was a bit sort of pie in the sky, but you know, the bookies odds on him shortened as well. So, you know, I guess it might have made people think, well, could there be anything in that? But, I think someone like of that caliber was probably always quite unlikely, even like an Ainsworth, whose last job obviously was in the Championship. Might have been a difficult one to attract. So I think the choice would have probably become, if you're looking at a list of experienced proven managers, probably between him and Cowley, I think. And I don't think there's a whole lot between them. And I think Core fits into the current structure of the football club a bit, but sorry, Harris, sorry, I should say fits into the structure.
It's a Freudian slip.
Yeah, because of someone like Barry Core, for example, who he'll know from his time at Southend. And, you know, the club have obviously kept on Betsy and they've kept on Core. And obviously, I guess that, you know, Neil Harris will probably fit into that model with Ben Strang, maybe better than the Cowleys might, who might have, you know, because obviously naturally they come as a pair, probably would have wanted to run things their own way, shall we say. And obviously that's absolutely fair enough. They've built a career on doing things in that way. But no, it's Harris, and I'm pretty happy with it, to be honest. I kind of echo what I said the last time I was on before the cup game, which is, well, I mean, it kind of fell flat on its face a bit because we were 3-0 up inside about 14 minutes against Fleetwood. But I don't think we're necessarily going to see a really significant impact straight away from this change. I think we might look back in, hopefully, in 4 or 5 months and think we made the right change at the right time and made a good appointment. And that's where you'll see the benefit of this, rather than, for example, looking at games against Charlton and Blackpool and thinking, well, if we don't get anything from either of those games, then that's it. It's a terrible mistake and it's a disastrous appointment. But I like to think he can kind of make his mark on the team. I think the players suit him pretty well. It's something that he alluded to as well in his sort of first interview for the club. And I think the key is exactly what he said. He wants to make us a nasty prospect to play against. Like, he wants teams to fear playing against us. And that quite emphatically had gone, you know, towards the end of Bonner's time. You know, you've only got to look at the sort of collective shrug of the shoulders after Lincoln's second goal on that Tuesday night to know that that was sort of time up and something was needed to change. And I think it's a pretty decent change that we've made there. I think on paper, you know, obviously, you know, you always say that, or Casper would, you know, love to say that football famously is played on grass. But yeah, I think if you're looking at what do you want from your appointment, what do you want from your Mark Bonner successor, I think Harris ticks a lot of those boxes.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to disagree with any of that. Let's get a few thoughts from some of the Hughes fans. Boris says, good appointment on paper, won't be a fan favourite from the off, and will have his work cut out to win favour, especially if he adapts the defensive game that he did with Gillingham. Fingers crossed, though, his higher level experience shines through and gets us playing. James says, it shows again how far the club has come in recent years to be able to appoint a manager of his experience. Stuart says, a good appointment, promotion from League One, lots of championship experience and playoff experience. Thinking high there, Stuart, love it. He also has links to the locality. Again, knows the city and knows the area. Actually, I said that. I don't expect huge changes to the playing style, but hopefully we'll show more ambition away from home and score a few more. Jamie said it's a step up. Paul said, don't think they could have appointed anyone with a better CV. Should do well. Hopefully everyone can get behind him and back the team. Let's hear a bit more from someone who has watched Neil Harris manage their team for 4 seasons. As mentioned, this is Omer from That Millwall Podcast. Hey, Omer, thank you very much for joining us. So obviously we're going to spend a few minutes just talking about someone who I think is a bit of a club legend down at Millwall and has just joined the U's, Neil Harris. What's the lowdown?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Neil Harris obviously is Millwall's all-time leading goal scorer, and that's as a player. And then took the manager's job, probably 2015, 16? You might have the numbers in front of you. But he was initially a caretaker manager in one spell, then became our outright manager. And I don't think you'll find a single Millwall fan that doesn't appreciate Neil Harris as the person, the man, and also the footballer, and in some cases, the manager. He's a brilliant, brilliant, iconic figure for us. And the word legend gets used a lot amongst football clubs, but Neil Harris is a Millwall legend, and I'm glad to see him get a job at the U's for you boys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, you know, he's got such a strong connection to you guys. You were the first people that we sort of wanted to speak to. Mm-hmm. He obviously went on also to manage Cardiff and then Gillingham, doing very different sort of ends of the sort of football league, from Cardiff going finishing fifth with them in the Championship and Gillingham sort of unfortunately getting them relegated, but they obviously had a 10 point margin to make up when he joined them in League One. But at Millwall, what was the story about of him getting the job? Because I saw he was a caretaker a few times beforehand, and was he just transitioning through the coaching staff from being a player? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I mean, so he left us as a player, I think 2010, 2011 era sort of time. Left and then went to Southend for a couple of years, then got the job as like the under 23s manager at the time. Kind of, you know, ushered into the club, and obviously then from there it was kind of working his way through it and, you know, getting to know the young players. I think we lost Steve Lomas, who he was kind of the assistant manager to at the time, took over as caretaker. We lost 4-1 in a cup game at Southend, and it was a dreaded kind of, you know, all round poor game. And I think after that, I think he knew he wasn't ready for it. And then the time then came again, I think, towards the end of Ian Holloway's spell in 2015, who came in afterwards, and then took the job to the end of the season as a caretaker initially, and then stayed on after we got relegated. And obviously the stories there afterwards, we got to the playoffs the first year, lost at Wembley, then came back the year after and won promotion at Wembley. So, yeah, I mean, he kind of got his way into it, and from there just kind of made his name as his own right as a manager as well.
When that year he first got you to the playoffs, was that unexpected, mm-hmm. or were you expected to be able to be finishing at that end of the division, or had he done sort of exceeded expectations?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a bleak time for us at the time, because we had like a season with Holloway where we had like 42 different players play for us in one season, and wow. players in and out, revolving kind of door. And I think at the time it was like, right, this is going to be like a bit of a rebuild job. And I mentioned the 23, so he had a good knowledge of the youngsters, brought a few of them in at the time. And I think, you know, with that, he then kind of built a new team. And it was that transitional stage, really. He has his tried and tested. He brought back a couple like club kind of figures of like Steve Morrison at the time and Tony Craig, who are like well-known at our level, obviously at the Championship and League One. And then it was kind of building again. And I think the second half of the season, we went on quite a good run, scored a lot of goals. And yeah, I mean, it was a bit unexpected, but at the same time in League One, you'd expect to do quite well. And I think it's one of the first times in my lifetime anyway. Normally you go to League One and you're destined to be there for 5-6 years. But, you know, after 2 years spell, you can't say you didn't do a bad job there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the bit I'm really interested in is then, so obviously you get promoted, and what is mm-hmm. a couple of seasons in the Championship with
yeah, Liverpool? I think we had, well, go on, ask questions.
I was just going to say, how did they go? Because I imagine it was like sort of keep us up, yep. maybe one of the lower end of the budgets. It sounds a lot like, you know, in the tier below, the sort of job he'll be stepping in with us, just focus on survival mm-hmm. and then in the next few seasons, see where you can progress. And I'm sort of interested how we did at that in those first few years.
Yeah, so we got promoted at Wembley and beat Bradford. And then that first season of the Championship, I think we finished ninth, but we had an outside chance of the playoffs up to the last day of the season, which was remarkable at the time. I think it's that kind of, you know, promotion buzz. And obviously it kind of carried us through second half of the season. We went on a run, I think, of 19 games unbeaten or something at the time, and, you know, really punching above our weight. And, you know, I think we signed Tim Cahill in the January window at the time. He didn't play a game, but Cahill was a Millwall legend amongst us as well. Brought back, you know, a few players and just really galvanised the fans, really. And, you know, for him, I think it was a match made in heaven, really, because, you know, he understood us as a club. We understood him. And, you know, it's a bit of a taboo, you know, if you're a club legend as a player, should you come back and be the manager? But he took it on at the time with both hands and really succeeded with us. And, yeah, we got, I think, we finished 8th, 9th at the time. And then this year after was a bit more of a rocky period. You know, the honeymoon period is over in the Championship, and you've got that stability now to kind of get and gather. And then he managed to keep us up. And then the year after, I think he left in the October time afterwards. But yeah, I mean, at the time, obviously, you're riding that kind of crest of the wave, aren't you? And obviously, first in the Championship, he was definitely punching above his weight with a smaller budget.
Yeah, amazing. And what sort of, if you had to describe it, what sort of style of football does he like to play? Well, let's be honest, is it quite negative, sort of happy to not have the ball and sort of lump it long to
yeah.
the ground? What's his strategy?
I think he succeeds as a player at Millwall. I think our case is a bit unique, really. You know, we're an old school club in a sense, and working class football and 4-4-2, that kind of niche, really. And we had Holloway in, who tried to, you know, kind of tear it up and, you know, play, you know, the tiki-taka football sure. and try and play it up in the back, which is something we're actually trying to do nowadays, funny enough. But Harris came in and basically made it simple again. And it was always the kind of phrase of get up to the front two, then play from there, not really mess about with it at the back. It was kind of get to the final third, then you play your football. And he said, you know, we did play good football. We weren't necessarily lump it and hope for the best. It was get to the final thirds, you get your wingers into the game, you know, utilise a front four really that's attacking at the time. And yeah, I think it wasn't negative, but it wasn't like the pretty football of 70% possession and complete yeah. dominance in games. But it was, you know, try to edge out. And we had a good few cut runs under Harris as well, which was, you know, very appreciative at the time. We beat the Premier League champions at the time, Leicester, with 10 men. And, you know, we beat the likes of Watford at the then, Bournemouth. You know, I think we even went to Tottenham, but we lost 6-0 in the end. But that was the end of that cup run at the time. So I think we got to the quarterfinals at the time. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you had to say something negative about him over that time, I mean, obviously, brilliant manager for you. But if there was one thing, you know, you'd sort of warn us on from what you saw, is there anything in particular that you might spot?
Maybe a reluctance to change it up a bit when it's, you know, times are going tough at the time. With us, like I said, like, you know, he succeeded as a player. He knew what it was about to get the fans on side. And he was quite big on, like, you know, the players bringing the fans into the game and try and get an atmosphere going. And then it's got its own kind of story, obviously, there. But I think it's probably reluctance to change it up. It was quite this is how we're going to play. And listen, it worked overall. And, you know, at the end of his spell, it wasn't because he was sacked. He said he took it as far as he could, which is a testament to him at the time, because he was like, I don't think I can take it any further and I'm worried it's going to go backwards. So then we brought Rowett in and went on to bigger and better things in a sense. So, yeah, I think I say probably reluctantness and the stubbornness to play a certain style of play. But, you know, if it gets results, you'll take it every day of the week, yeah, won't you?
Absolutely. Last question then, obviously, you've sort of answered this a little bit just in some of your other answers. Mm-hmm. But obviously with you guys, you already had a connection as a player. But as a manager, did he also try and like keep that connection with the fans and like do stuff in the community? And what was that, his sort of relationship like with the fans as a manager?
Absolutely. I think for us, obviously, it's unique, like I said, because he had that relationship as a player. But yeah, he's very big on getting the fans on side. And, you know, I think even at Gillingham, I've seen clips where he's on the pitch at the end of the games and he's, you know, trying to motivate everyone and get everyone going. So he's a motivator. He will try and get the best out of his players. He's a man manager. The players will love playing for him in the sense that, you know, he'll be their agony aunt. He'll be there for them. He'll try and win that dressing room over. And that's one thing you have to say, that kind of morale did carry us a lot. And he's that kind of person to build the morale up amongst the club.
Well, fingers crossed, mate.
Fingers crossed for you, boys. I'm hoping it goes well.
Thank you very much, mate, and cheers for chatting.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much there to Omar for that little roundup there. Obviously, we knew how well Omar was going to speak of him there. I think that was sort of maybe part of the reason why we wanted to speak to them, right? To sort of hear maybe the good side of it. And he has a very strong connection with Millwall. But something I wanted to ask you was, do you think it's important, something Omar mentions there, is the fact that Neil Harris had this connection with the fans and really tried to nurture that and constantly was trying to sort of, that was a real priority for him to sort of, to speak to fans in a way that sounded like quite reminiscent of a connection that Bonner had with us, obviously, without the 30 years following Cambridge United. But do you think that that's going to be quite important that someone is going to follow Mark Bonner to sort of to try and connect to fans, because we had such a unique connection with Mark Bonner? Do you think trying to replicate that a little bit is something that's going to be quite important for his success?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, in many ways, that's probably going to be his biggest challenge is kind of stepping out of the shadow, if you like, of someone like Bonner. But, you know, let's be really clear. If you know, a big priority on your checklist for a Cambridge United manager is that they've supported the football club for 30 years. You narrow down the pool of possible managers quite significantly to a point where it's just a little bit silly, really. Look, just because he didn't have a season ticket in the 90s and sort of early 2000s does not mean that Neil Harris won't be a successful Cambridge United manager. It doesn't mean that he can't build a bridge with the fans. You know, even for him, like, it might be difficult to do that, early doors, sort of the same way that he did at Millwall, because obviously naturally he already had that connection with Millwall fans, probably more so than Bonner did with our fans, realistically, because obviously he'd been such a significant part of their teams over the years, and from a playing perspective, whereas Bonner was obviously all right, people knew who he was, but he was a backroom member of staff. He wasn't the club's all-time top goal scorer. You know, you think back to when John Taylor was manager, for example, like that is kind of comparable to that. And I guess that's something he'll want to do quite quickly. I hope it's not sort of manufactured in the same way that Sean Derry tried to do it with all this just sort of generic sort of fist pumps at the end of games. I hope it's done in a bit more of an organic way and buying into things that the football club does off the pitch and away from the actual football side of it. But look, that's something that will happen realistically if things go well. If it's a total disaster, he's going to struggle to build bridges and really build a connection with the fans. But I don't expect, and I really hope that that's not going to be the case. But yeah, for sure, I think that's something he'll have to do probably fairly early on, I think, because you don't want to go from what Bonner was to having someone who's just totally disconnected and totally very distant from the fan base. I'm sure that's not something that he'd be aiming for either.
Yeah, of course. I think that's you're right. That is going to be one of his biggest challenges. Someone else that we spoke to for a bit of an opinion on him. Obviously, this is quite a hard pod to do because, it's not. Obviously, we've played against a few Harris teams here and there, but I wouldn't say someone that we've come into contact with loads and loads of times. And like you say, his name always pops up on these lists, but it's only in the last sort of few days that we've really contemplated the prospect of having him as manager. So it's going to take a few weeks for us to sort of build our own opinion and judgment on what he can do with this side and at this club. And obviously he's got January coming up as well. I assume he'll be fairly well back there. Let's hear from Matt from Jills in the Blood. So this isn't recorded. This is just a message that we asked him about his thoughts on Harris. And he replied saying, fair play to him getting himself back into the game. I was a fan. We know we didn't score enough throughout his reign, but he always gave us a solid platform to build from. But you love that. So if we can do that, and you've
now
got
we're
decent...
talking. Now we're talking.
So if you can do that and you've got decent enough options at the top end, you'll do all right. His record from January to his sacking was superb. I didn't agree with his dismissal when it came. Quite interesting that, because that's an opinion from a guy who, from the only club he's actually been relegated with into the level below, which I think is a lot of people's criticisms maybe of it as an appointment. Let's talk about the playing style first for a second, because that's another thing that's been mentioned a few times. Ben asks, what do you think changes on the pitch in the short term? Change of style, formation, and what about the longer term? Are you expecting to see, I mean, maybe more of the same from Bonneball? Is that a criticism, or is that just if you do it well, it's okay?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of parts to it. And obviously, you know, in terms of actual player selection and formations and stuff, that is quite difficult to predict, because even though we feel that we know what his style is probably going to be and what his approach is going to be, we don't know exactly how that's going to look and how it's going to manifest itself. I don't think there's going to be a huge departure from what Bonner was doing, essentially, which is fundamentally just trying to make us a difficult team to beat and a difficult team to play against, which actually for the first bit of the season we did pretty well. You know, we talked a lot about clean sheets. It's good to hear that he's able to build a platform as well, which obviously is important for anyone connected to this football club.
Big tick.
Massive tick in the box. Enormous. I've seen already just in the last couple of hours since obviously the news broke, a couple of criticisms of what is perceived style of players, and you know that we're getting unattractive football and this, that, and the rest of it. I mean, we're not exactly transitioning from like Pep Guardiola's 2008 Barcelona team tiki taka style to like back to John Beck days, are we? Like, let's be very clear, since we got back into League One, the football has been quite attritional, and rightly so. Like that's the way it's had to be.
I was just going to mention John Beck on this, because do you know how, like, and this is the sort of a notional term of like a club style that you can read into as much as you want, depending on the context. But I think if you did look at different clubs, there are certain clubs like Spurs and Swansea who do really back themselves on how they should play football and try and have this real identity on the pitch. I don't think we quite have that, but I think if the closest thing we've ever had to it is John Beck, who was famous for playing the worst, most direct, you know, stand in the corners, hold the ball up, effective style of football. I'm not saying that that's what Harris is going to do, but what I'm saying is Omer, the Millwall fan we spoke to earlier, he mentioned that Millwall have a similar sort of identity, broad identity of playing 4-4-2, quite direct football, which obviously fitted Harris quite well. My point being, should we just sort of try and own that? You know, you own playing direct football, and if you do it well, why not be successful with it?
Yeah, you should do. I mean, look, this should be one of his kind of core principles, I think, is making us a horrible team to play against. And I don't mean that necessarily. You know, you don't have to go full Ainsworth with it. You don't have to be like, total anti-football. But, you know, if you look at what his Millwall side were, and I went and watched them a couple of times while he was manager, particularly that League One promotion year, and, you know, what you can say about a club like Millwall with everything that is said about them and everything that is attached to them, if nothing else, they're a proper up and at it football club and a football team. And he was able to kind of build a team very much in the image of that particular environment. And that was obviously really successful for them. I think you're right. I think that it's similar with us. You know, I don't think it was quite like that in the League Two promotion year under Bonner. I don't think it was quite like that in the conference promotion year under Richard Money. But I think a lot of our better moments as a football club have come when we've had this kind of, kind of up and at them approach. You know, if you look at the John Beck team, it was aggressive. It was difficult to play against. Teams didn't relish coming here. And if you look at our first couple of seasons in League One, particularly the first season back, it was exactly the same. You know, we talked about little old Cambridge a lot, and it's a phrase that I think now we maybe resent a little bit to some extent because of, the connotations that it has with maybe certain performances and a certain mentality. But like, it's true, right? Like, you know, we are going to be backs against the wall in a lot of situations. And you know, it's not to say that, you know, Neil Harris should start going overboard on talking about how crap we are and how small time we are compared to the teams we're playing against, which was something that I think grated on a lot of people towards the end of Bonner. But yeah, for sure, he should absolutely own that. And the second thing that I was just going to add as well is like, in terms of a playing style and in terms of an approach and a setup, I don't think it's a great look when football clubs, it's like a pendulum. Like you have a manager at one end and it just swings completely the other way to for the next appointment. Like if you look at the way the football club was run pre-Bonner, basically, and you look at the appointments there, Derry followed money, which is just a completely different profile. It's completely different everything. Like it's such a departure from what came before. Then Dunn followed Derry, which again was a very different, you know, sort of profile, a very different style and a very different approach. And then it was Coldwood, which again was, and you swing one way to the other and there's no coherence, there's no plan, there's no vision, there's no idea of how can this football club be successful at this level, at this moment in time. Whereas I think if you look at what we've gone from with Bonner to Harris, I think it follows a much more kind of natural sort of progression. And I think that's probably a good thing. And I think that's something that hopefully means that, you know, the football club have gone into this decision. Like, make no mistake, they won't have sacked Bonner and not had any idea of what they wanted to do next. There will have been some succession plan, whether that's a particular name or a profile of manager that they want. And they've had a really clear idea about the sort of person and the sort of style and the sort of approach that they want to bring into the club next. And I think Harris ticks a lot of those boxes, like I mentioned a couple of times. But, you know, if we're looking at playing styles and stuff like that, I don't think it's fair to start throwing criticism around about what Harris's playing style might or might not be, because let's be very clear, like we've not come from a very high level with that. You know, what we want is someone who can make it more effective, because at the end we were anything but difficult to beat. We were very easy to beat. And I think if we can do that and we can become you know, the sort of prospect where teams would look at us, particularly at home, but also go into their place, and you know, if you look at Charlton on Saturday, or if it's Blackpool coming to the Abbey, or Oxford on Boxing Day, or whatever it might be, and those teams and those fans and people connected to that club go, we're in for a bit of a game here, then he's probably doing his job quite well. And I think I'm pretty hopeful, pretty confident that that's the sort of football club that he can build, or football team that he can build.
I completely agree. I think especially that point about style, because I remember when the names first started cropping up, I think I mentioned Carl Robinson, and I think you're right in saying, but that's just completely different. And I think we can give footballers a bit more credit in that I think they're smart enough to adapt to styles. But I think when you're swinging the pendulum so far from one way to the other, you are at risk, especially when this probably is a bit of a safety first appointment, I think, which is completely fair enough. Let me ask this question as well, sort of following on the back of that. Simon and Kwame have both asked about youth players and bringing through young players. So Kwame's asked, admittedly don't know loads about him, but interested to know what everyone thinks this will mean for our younger or youth players. Obviously Bonds had a lot to do with it, so wasn't shy to bring people through. Will Harris look at the likes of Simper and McConnell and get rid? And I think it's quite interesting, Tom, for a couple of reasons. Firstly, I know obviously Bonner was in charge for a long time, did brilliant things for our academy over the course of his time at Cambridge United in a broader sense. But I mean, if you look at the current side at the moment, I mean, Lewis Simper can't get a look in cup games. McConnell, people have been calling to play a lot more than he has done, and he's been sort of making do with bench time here and there. I'm not trying to use this as a place to criticise Bonner, but I don't think that we're exactly going from a guy who was championing youth players every single game and getting them into the team at every single opportunity. I think, in fact, the one player I can think of, Liam Bennett aside, who obviously isn't technically an academy graduate, who's played a really significant amount of first team appearances, you're probably about to correct me, but Ben Warman last year, and it was enforced, and he went at the end of the season and he wasn't quite good enough. What are your thoughts? I mean, I think for me, as an appointment, what this appointment is to keep us in this division for, if he can keep us in this division for 18 months, it's a success. So I'm personally not that asked about how he does that. But if anything, if Simper and McConnell aren't getting in Bonner's sides, it's a chance for them to try and impress a new manager.
Yeah, I mean, look, to, you know, I guess if you're trying to kind of second guess, you know, what is considered success by the board and by the owners of bringing Harris in, I think it is pretty much exactly that. But I think the phrase that has been used a lot, and I don't have the statements in front of me, so I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but the sort of sentiment that's been used is, we need someone who, for this moment in our development as a club, is going to be able to achieve what we need, which I think fundamentally is to keep us up, but keep us up with relative comfort that we can go ahead into a project like building a football ground, for example, or redeveloping a football ground, which obviously significantly changes the outlook of what we might look to achieve in the future and how we might look to do it. And if we can do that, and Neil Harris can do that, then yeah, it'll be a success, right? I think he would be a much braver man than I am to come in and first game in charge go, get the kids in.
Ben McConnell, left wing.
I don't think that's going to happen. Not straight away anyway. Look, there's no reason that, someone like Lewis Simper, who, you know, let's be really clear, Bonner just didn't seem to fancy by the end of it for whatever reason that was. You know, when you look at Ben Warman getting in teams and getting in squads ahead of him, seemed a little bit baffling at the time. And, obviously he hasn't really had much of a look in since. And, you know, obviously McConnell's been here in stops and starts. He made a decent, gave a decent account of himself when he last played against Lincoln, and has done on one or two other occasions as well. But do I really think that a new manager is going to come in and build the team around youngsters? Probably not, to be honest. But that's not to say that, you know, they can't use this opportunity. Like, you've still got to factor into the discussion that a lot of the players who are in this squad for a lot of this season have underperformed a bit and haven't given what we think they can. You know, you look at George Thomas, you look at Paul Digby, for example, I think particularly Adam May, even in that central midfield position, have sold themselves a little bit short, particularly Thomas, given his sort of early season form. And, you know, out wide, even though it was a pretty blistering display by all accounts on Saturday from someone like Kai, hasn't probably delivered yet what we're expecting. That gives room for a McConnell to come in and basically try and make a bit more of an impact on the first team than he has maybe in weeks and months gone by. But I think if you're really hoping that they're going to be chucked straight into the deep end and that they're going to start a Charlton, for example, I think you're probably going to be quite disappointed, because I think Harris will look at this squad and I think what he'll see is a pretty decent group of pros. I don't think he's looking at it thinking, wow, we can really like impact the top end of this division, like we can really significantly improve what's been going on. But I think he'll look at what he's got available to him and think, there's enough here for me to do what I think is expected of me and potentially a little bit more. But I don't think he's going to do that by going dipping straight into the youth team and chucking some new bodies in there.
Be class if he did. I'll tell you what, man, Matt Castle will be absolutely buzzing if Nascimento starts every week. Got a question from Josh sort of on the back of that. Although it's not too far from Bonner's style of play, any early predictions of any players who could really thrive under Harris? If you had a name, this has only just come through. So this is sort of live, I guess, for both of us.
I'd probably be looking at the strikers, to be honest.
Maybe.
This is really, really basic analysis, but Neil Harris was a striker. Should do quite well. I look at someone like Fajiri, for example. Obviously, Neil Harris built himself, particularly at Millwall and obviously one or two other places. Really endeared himself to the fans through the way that he played the game, and obviously he's still their all-time top goal scorer, right? So you'd be looking at someone like Fajiri, who we know has got goals in him, who has got performances in him, and thinking, can he really leave a bit of a mark on him? I'm not expecting us to turn into a really free-flowing attack inside. I'm not expecting us to significantly increase our goal output, so maybe that's a little bit contradictory. In which case, look, I'd probably be looking at like the centre mids, for example, just because it's such an obvious area for improvement in the team. And if we're going to play in the way that I think we will, which is going to be probably a bit more high energy, a bit more high pressing, and really sort of up and at them, you know, for want of a better phrase, I think our centre mids are going to be crucial to that. So they're the ones that I think immediately you can get a bit of reaction out of and get a bit more out of. And we know the quality that we've got there as well. So if he can do that, then he's already well on his way to improving things, hopefully.
Yeah, excellent. Let's wrap up this chat on Harris just by talking about a little bit more, just going full circle, a bit more about his record and at the time of appointment, comparing him to some previous appointments. Let's start with one side of the coin, which is friend of the pod, Tom Sewell. List of managers who have been appointed, having been previously sacked by a team in the division below, and it's been a success. Seems like something dysfunctional clubs do, not ones in the most desirable position they've been in for decades, if ever, given off the pitch investment. So, Tom, you have done a bit of digging on this very briefly. So, I'm going to leave it to you to to broadcast what you found, which is four examples, which I think, look, I take it away.
I'm going to make the admission now. What I'm about to say is not going to convince Thomas Hall that this is the right appointment for a football club. But he's asked me a question, and just like a postman, I always deliver.
There is one I think there is one actual genuinely good answer.
Yeah, and also there's actually parallels between where the club was and where it is now. So I'll look at, firstly, Liam Rosinia, who was obviously sacked by Derby last season to make way for Paul Warren going in there. And he then took the job at Hull City in the Championship.
Who are sixth now?
Who are currently sat in the playoff places, which is miles above where they were when he took over. And if you want to talk about a dysfunctional football club, that's what Hull City were before Liam Rosinia took over. Ownership problems, fans protesting, the lot of it. New ownership, they're literally in the best position they've probably been in, you know, from a kind of governance perspective for probably about a decade, to be honest with you. And they've hired a manager who was perceived not to be doing his job well enough in the league below, and he's coming in and done well. The rest of them are
tenuous.
Yeah, tenuous, should we say. And look, factually, this one's just not answering his question at all. But I think the sentiment is fair, which is Oxford appointed Liam Manning last season. Obviously, that's not from the league below, but he was essentially going to get MK relegated. And he comes in and firstly keeps them up and then has them in the top two to the point that he gets a championship offer. Chris Wilder, obviously, at the moment. I mean, look, at time of recording, he's just been beaten in his first game back at Sheffield United, having been sacked by Watford in the Championship last season. So there's another one. Again, that's not one that I expect to massively prove what Tom's saying wrong, to be honest.
This last one will, though.
See how it goes. This one is really, really tenuous because I'm going to talk about Claudio Ranieri, who was sacked by Greece, right? And I'm basically talking about levels here. So being sacked by Greece, I think, is a pretty low moment for a manager of his standing in the game. He then took over at Leicester, and obviously what happened there, as they say, is history.
What absolutely cracked me up about this is just in the running order where you've written Ranieri sacked by Greece, in brackets, shit international team.
Never wins the league with Leicester. Look, it's tenuous, right? But I think the point to make here is that if you look at examples of managers who have been hired, having been perceived to have done a pretty bad job at a perceived lower level in their last role, I don't think it has a huge amount of impact on what happens next, which is basically the point that I'm trying to make. And, look at it the other way, right? There's plenty of examples of managers coming down who then do a bad job. You know, you look at Paul Warren at Derby. I know they're sorting things around a little bit, but he came in with incredible reputation from the league above and hasn't really been able to replicate it. So I don't think that just because somebody does well before, it means they're going to do well again. And I don't think that just because someone who's been sacked in their last role means that they can't go and do well somewhere else. It's all about, like, what do we want from him and what can he deliver? And I think what we want from him is pretty, pretty clear and pretty, pretty straightforward. It's to keep us up with some relative ease, relative comfort. That's not to say like we'll be safe in like February or something, but certainly not in the sort of situation that we were in last season, which obviously survived on the final day. And if Neil Harris can do that, then he's done a successful job. I said it after Bonner left. I don't really think the expectation changes at all for the football club or a successor. I just think it was the case that, without wanting to kind of reopen this can of worms and go into the argument again, I think it was pretty obviously time for a change, fresh ideas. That's what we've got. And all going well, we'll be in a better position in a few months' time.
Yeah, 100%. Just the last one as well on that. Jez asks, good appointment. I can't think of a manager who arrives with a better record. Maybe Roy Mack. I think you've picked three out here. Roy McFarland, one promotion with Bradford from League Two to League One, top flight playing career, multiple England caps. Richard Money, one promotion from League Two to League One as well. With Walsall, top flight playing career and a European Cup winner, lest we forget. Claude Leroy, won AFCON, obviously not a shit international team. Cameroon, famously.
Not under Claude.
Definitely not under Claude. But they, it's a good point, actually, when you think about it. I mean, someone's got to be able to correct us on this, but does Neil Harris arrive with the best record of any manager we've ever appointed? Potentially. I mean, 176 championship games managed, it's quite a lot, promotion from League One to the Championship. Have we actually ever hired a manager of a stature like his?
Well, I mean, I saw this coming in before I did all this glittering research. and I was like, nah, come on. That's a bit of an overreaction, but it's actually not. Like, if you look through a list of the managers that we've had in the past, and also, by the way, I will make the caveat here that actually a lot of the more successful managers have been ones that have come in with literally no reputation at all. You think Mark Bonner, you think John Beck, for example, and they're the ones that have gone on to do really, really impressive things with the football club. So again, like, I will make the point that just because Harris comes in with a decent reputation, a decent track record, it's no guarantee of success. It's a good indicator that he can be successful, but it's not a guarantee of it. But no, I think it's absolutely fair to say, you know, like, we haven't really had someone who's achieved success at the level that he's achieved it at. And by that, I mean getting someone promoted from League One into the Championship and then getting a team that was sort of relatively unfancied into the playoffs in the Championship. I think you can look through back through all our managers, and no one has done that before coming to this football club. And very few have gone on to do it since as well, which is obviously another point to make. So maybe we're a bit of a graveyard. So, well, the best, Neil, but I think the point stands, and it kind of goes full circle to what we're saying right at the beginning, which is like, I think if you're sat here and you're disappointed with this and you're thinking, I'm a bit underwhelmed here, I think you've got to have a bit of a reality check on sort of what you're expecting to come in and who you're expecting to come in. I think this is a really serious appointment. It's a really decent appointment. And I think we had another comment, apologize, I can't remember who it was from, but it kind of reflects where the clubs, how far the clubs come. Because I think if we had made obviously, as we discussed and debated at length around this time last year and had made the change then to sack Bonner, I don't think a manager like Neil Harris is considering Cambridge United seriously. To be really honest, and that was at a time where he was managing Gillingham in League Two. I think he's looking at Gillingham with new owners coming in and thinking, this is actually a much better prospect. Obviously, this isn't the choice that he's made. He's not swapped Gillingham for us. It's obviously not how things have gone. But if you look where we are now with obviously a clear pathway to redeveloping the ground, obviously still a lot of work to do there. Of course, there is new training facilities that we're now moved into. This is an eminently more attractive job, a more attractive proposition for a manager of Neil Harris's standard in the game than it would have been 6 months ago, probably. And, obviously huge credit has to go to Mark Bonner for that as well, for the way that he sort of managed things in his time here and obviously for the board and the owners and stuff. But when I look at it and when I analyse it, I think, you know what, this is one to be, you know, let's be honest, like, we're not getting carried away here. Like, we're not saying this is like a serious, exciting appointment for the football club that everyone's thinking we can really take us to the next level. I think it's one that means that we can hopefully achieve what our ambitions are, really, which is to be comfortable in this division. And, in the meantime, to try and scramble around as much as we can to get that ground sorted out. And then who knows? And if that's the legacy that Neil Harris leaves, you know, because obviously, you know, managers famously do leave football clubs often. Then he'll have done a good job, and he'll be remembered fondly, just like he is pretty much everywhere else as well. Like, you don't see it that often where managers have been at sort of three and four clubs, and pretty much all their fans turn around and say, "Do you know what? He's actually done the right job for us there," which seems to be the sentiment. So, in that respect, I'm pretty happy.
The important thing to do, Tom, is to not write him off before a ball's been kicked. And I think that is, look, genuinely, I mean, I am joking a little bit there, because I'm seeing a few people with a few of their opinions, a couple of which we've sort of just discussed and read out. But in all seriousness, like, let's give the man a chance. Like, you might think that it's an uninspiring appointment. You might think, as I think me and Tom do, that it's sort of exactly what we need and a guy with actually a really impressive, brilliant CV. But let's let him prove it, shall we? Let's give it a couple of months before really making any value judgments. Let's give him January. Let's probably sit here in 3 months at in mid Feb or late Feb and see how he's got on at the start of his career at Cambridge United.
Got to go.
Brilliant. Never rash, are you, Thomas? All right, look, first game. Let's just have a quick word on Charlton away. Obviously, it's quite hard to do a preview for the game itself, because we don't really know how we might line up, formations. We've spoken a little bit about his general playing style at other clubs, but probably more of the same from Saturday, I expect, Tom. Anything specific about Charlton? I mean, this is, I've got to say, that I just did the Charlton live preview. We've got ours coming up at the end of the show. And when I told Louis from Charlton Live that we just hired Neil Harris, his face dropped because he's told me that they've only lost to a Neil Harris. They've only beaten a Neil Harris side once. And they used to play each other all the time with Millwall and Cardiff and then Gillingham, which was last year when Charlton did finally beat them. So brilliant record against Charlton. It means a lot to him because of obviously his connections with Millwall. So it's all there, mate. Tom, it's written in the stars. Hughes win on Saturday. What a game for him to start his career with.
Can I just add to this as well? And this really is the benefit of recording late on a Wednesday evening, following all the Bristol Street Motors Trophy games. You thought you'd heard the last of that for one year, didn't you? No, yeah. Not quite.
You know, that actually took me a moment to remember what that was. I was genuinely confused for a second. Go on.
So Charlton actually played away at Reading in that tonight as we record. And they got dumped out on penalties. And I've just seen a video on Twitter of Charlton's current manager, Michael Appleton, remonstrating with fans in the away end, who seemed not best pleased to have been knocked out of such a prestigious competition. So it feels like things are set up really well.
Joe will also mention at the end of the show, they have a lot of players out injured at the moment. They've got one recognised striker at the moment. Granted, that striker has scored as many goals as Erling Haaland, I think, this year in all competitions. Alfie May. But, you know, Morrison Bennett dominating.
Oh, it's all set up, isn't it? Come on, mate. A Millwall legend managing his new club. First game, Charlton away. I mean, that's the stuff of dreams, isn't it?
That's the stuff, mate. I'm feeling pretty confident about it, to be honest. I mean, you're about to hear the Charlton fan predictor. The one thing he says is we will definitely not keep a clean sheet. So, look.
Do you know what? If it wasn't for Saturday and putting four past Fleetwood, I'd be like, you definitely will.
Yeah. Okay, look, let's see how Harris gets on at Charlton tomorrow. Tom, I'll just have a prediction from you before we go for Saturday's game.
2-1, 95th minute winner.
Oh, love that. I'm going 3-1. 3-1 news. Let's hear from Joe from Charlton Live to wrap the show up. But before that, Thomas, thank you very much as ever. And here's to next year's FSA.
Hi there, my name's Peter Drury and this is Under the Abbey Stand.
Right, the news fans, delighted to be joined by Joe from Charlton Live here. Podcast about all things Charlton Athletic, ahead of our upcoming trip this weekend. Joe, how's the season been so far for you?
Oh, God. I suppose those two words will sum it up. It's been highs, it's been lows. We've smashed a couple of teams. We have had some really disappointing performances. Took two attempts to scrape past Cray Valley Paper Mills in the FA Cup.
I wasn't going to bring it up, Joe, but you've done it.
Yeah, so it's one of those seasons. We're not quite at the levels that Charlton fans would want us to be. We've already had a change of manager. We could do with a few more players, and we got some big injuries as well. So two of our two key strikers out. Luckily, still got Alfie May, but we are very thin on the ground, so it's pretty much who's left is who will be in the squad on Saturday, and that's a real challenge for Appleton at the minute in terms of trying to get any consistency together, because he can hardly rotate anyone. So it's been a bit of a season, but January's coming up. We'll see what happens then.
Quite a futures, you never know. But I mean, you're lingering outside the playoff spots, sort of 7 or 8 points off, I think, at the moment. How's Appleton done since he's come in? Has he managed to put a bit of life in the team, or have you sort of had a bit of a bounce and then flattened out a bit?
We've definitely had a bounce. His win and draw record is pretty good. We don't lose a lot of games, but he has been fairly critical of the tools that are at his disposal, pretty much from day dot, getting in through the door. And although we've got wingers available to us in the squad, he's been playing strikers out wide. He has dropped a couple of players that on the surface of it, we can't necessarily understand why they wouldn't be in the squad. Louis Watson, for instance, who was in a really good vein of form and suddenly he went out. So I don't think he's got the squad that he really likes. And we've yet to see a complete performance, but that's been something that's plagued Charlton for 4 or 5 seasons now. So I don't think that's just down to Appleton. That is down to the characters in there. But he does seem to have got a bit of steeliness through the team in terms of not just capitulating and losing games, but that mentality is still within the players. So he's definitely pushing water uphill a little bit. Although I do think that he is the architect of his own downfall at times. But I'm one of the more, I say realistic, some people say pessimistic Charlton fans around. I think that the squad is capable of more if all the tools are put in the right places and people have the, you know, enough confidence pumped into them. So no one's calling for a change in manager there, but then there wasn't an overwhelming sea of people calling for Holden's head at the time, although you can't say that Appleton hasn't moved the squad forward since he has come in.
Yeah, so some improvements, I guess. What sort of style does he play, Appleton? How's he got you playing?
Direct, which is going to be challenged now because we did have Chucks and Ike, who everybody at this level knows is just a bit of a cheat code and an absolute unit. And then we did have Miles Leeburn as well. And Ike will be out until the new year. Leeburn is probably out till next season after a hamstring tear, but quite a bad one. So there's that does sort of impact our ability to play a bit more direct. So he's going to have to find a way to play through the midfield a little bit more, but it's not possession for possession's sake. It's very much trying to get at teams and attack. Hector will play a lot of balls from central defensive positions, and we will try and press teams high where we can. It's not the most attractive football that you've ever seen at the minute, but when it is working well, it can be scintillating. The problem is it only works well for short windows, and then and we're very, even under Appleton, we're frail at the back as well. So there have been a lot of goals in games. I don't expect that to necessarily change anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, something for Hughes fans to maybe hold out a bit of hope for. What about, who are the players that we should really be scared of? I imagine there's one name that stands out above the rest.
Yeah, so I imagine you're talking about Alfie May, who has scored again tonight. Another very, very good goal and very unlucky actually not to have a second excellently taken goal. He's, 2023, he's currently tied for league goals with Erling Haaland. So he sees that as a bit of a competition. So he is banging them in for fun. We do have a couple of other players. Louis Watson is very classy on midfield on his day, and is always a player that I enjoy watching. Blackett Taylor, who was out tonight with a slight injury, but he has been carrying something for a little while. So hopefully he's back and fit and properly ready to go on Saturday. And if he is on his day, he's very difficult to mark and get anywhere close to. But they're pretty much at the minute the players to watch, because all the other exciting ones are either injured or out of favour. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see which side he goes with on Saturday.
Yeah, interesting. Got to ask about one ex Cambridge United player, Lloyd Jones. How's he been getting on this season?
Oh, he's sensational.
He's a brilliant player. I was surprised you didn't mention him there, to be honest. I'm glad he's had just as good a start as he did with us. But what's he been like?
Defenders don't tend to get the ones to watch sort of exciting moniker. But he is. I was actually sat on Saturday in the Gillingham end watching us absolutely capitulate, and really regretting my decision to sit in the home end as opposed to the away for the better view. But everyone kept on saying around us, like, just don't hit it anywhere near the number two. Jones just cleared everything, and he is the one player in that defense who is solid, and you just have no concerns that he's going to make any mistakes. And he's definitely someone to build around moving forwards. Pretty much I'd say you would go a long, long way before you found a Charlton fan who didn't have him down as the defender that we can rely on. He's a quality addition. And I own a pub not far from the ground. In the pub beforehand, you'll be hearing his name sort of trotted about pretty confidently by players. And if he's not available, then we're going to panic.
Well, to be honest, I think you'll get his name his name talked about a lot from both sets of fans, and it sounds like a big part of us staying up last season. And another player who was a big part of us staying up last season was Conor McGrandles, who you gave to us for 6 months. But it seems like, judging by your face and from everything I ever read from Charlton fans, he's well out of favour at the Valley. Or is he, has he managed to sneak his way back in? I saw him score Pompey recently.
Apple's had him, I think, at Lincoln. Appleton came in and has been making great noises about McGrandles. There are some fans that he is winning over now, but I think that he embodies everything that's wrong with Charlton as a player at the minute.
What a damning indictment!
He's not good enough for all of the things he needs to be good enough at. So physically for us, I don't know if it's any different, and I'd love to actually hear your guys' views on it, but strikes me as very slow, very unagile. He doesn't particularly get around and cover the ground enough for the style of football that we play. And then on the ball, it's very one-dimensional and very safe, which again isn't enough for our midfield when we're trying to create, because especially when we're missing some of the attacking threats that we are, we need a bit more. So I see him as a backup to Dobbo, who is, for my money, one of the better defensive midfield players in the league. And when we do play a midfield with him and Dobson and Fraser in it, Dobson and Fraser are both very slow, very one-paced, and we just get overrun in the middle. So that's my views on him. But he was out tonight with an injury. So I think you won't see him on Saturday, but he seemed to come back with rave reviews from you guys. But
he did.
I would argue that he is a League One midfielder that wouldn't step up to the Championship. And if we're really being honest as a club, yes, we've been in League One a while, but our ambition should be moving into the Championship and players who can step up at that level. And for me, he's one of a number of the players in the squad that we've got that just wouldn't cope at that level. So
yeah,
that's
maybe
okay. It's me.
Different standards, maybe. Maybe. Couple of last questions. First one: if I had to push you for a prediction for Saturday, what would you go for?
Our home form is really good, so there's definitely that in it. And we've got a couple of young strikers who have come back who are probably due a bit of a goal. So I think we'll definitely concede. So I'm going to go for probably 2-1 for us. Okay. Yeah, could easily be 3-2 or 1-0 to you. It just depends on which Charlton turn up.
Just quickly, I'll put you on the spot for this one as well. We've just appointed Neil Harris as our new manager. I don't know if you'd have been of a vintage where you must have seen a couple of his Millwall sides down at the Valley back in the day at some stage. I'm not sure if you've crossed over. You're wincing a little bit, so it sort of seems like you might have done. What can we expect from him as an opposition fan?
I'm 34 and 33, sorry. I'm 34 in a couple of weeks, and I've not seen us beat Millwall, and he was there for a long time. Yeah. So my memories of Neil Harris are not particularly good. We did beat his Gillingham side in a friendly earlier this season. But that's friendlies, and he's going to get you right up for it. The physical fight is going to be there, and that is that's why we lost to Gillingham on Saturday. We didn't care enough. We weren't passionate enough. We got outfought all over the pitch. So he could, if he gets that type of performance out of you, it could be another one where we see him smiling and Charlton fans disappointed. But he's a manager that I think that most Charlton fans would be pleased to not see at the Valley for a while.
That's good news.
Yeah, it should. Hopefully it's a good appointment for you guys. It'd be nice for you guys to have a manager that's there for a few seasons and can build and knows the leagues pretty well. And he has had success, but I'm only pleased for you guys rather than for us.
All right, last question. We always ask away fans when we're going away, we always ask for a pub recommendation. And it sounds like you're going to give me somewhere close to home for you. So where should we be heading?
So I own the River Ale House. So that's where I'll be on Saturday. It's a 20-minute walk to the ground. There's buses direct. It is a cask ale establishment, so we don't have lager on tap. We do have it in cans, but that's if you're looking for more of a lagery pub. It's the Angus Is it the Angerstein or the Anti-Gallagher? Yeah, I think it's the Angerstein on the corner is the one where they drop the away fans off.
Yeah.
And that is for anyone who wants their sort of standard range of beer, and that's where you go. And River Ale House is for if you fancy cask ale and a slightly more micro pub style. Then we're your place.
All right, wicked. Joe, thank you very much and best of luck for the rest of the season after Saturday.
Yeah, same to you.